email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, our next guest, by his own admission, is addicted to love. So probably qualifies him to write a book called The Truth About Love, A Modern Manifesto and Spiritual Guide to Relationships. Conor Creighton, good afternoon and welcome to studio. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah. So we spoke last year about meditation, and you're a meditation teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And you've turned your focus now to love. And apart from admitting that you're addicted to it, what else qualifies you to write a book, a full book about love?
Well, I think what happened, or I'm not sure what qualifies me. Perhaps perhaps I just spent a little bit too much time on my own and thought I could do this. But the thing that kind of inspired it, at least, was just working as a meditation teacher, doing an awful lot of one-on-ones with people and recognizing that the one kind of common thing between people was there was a disconnection between themselves and love, and they had difficulty accessing real self-love. Okay. So my idea with the book was like, well, let's try and write a book that enables people to love themselves a bit more.
Right. And you reckon that the essence of life is self-love. We can't love anybody else unless we love ourselves. That's an old trope, but you believe it to be true.
Yeah, well, it's this idea.
Explain that to me.
Well, so when our love, right, comes from a very pure place, you know, it's that old trope of like, you cannot give from empty pockets, I think is very important. Like when your love comes from a place of not needing, not requiring anything, without conditions, then your love is at its purest. All other love in some form is transactional. You're doing something with the idea that something will come back to you from that person. So learning to kind of generate this love within yourself initially, rather than trying to absorb it and pick it up from other people and objects, is a way that you can really kind of develop a sense of love within yourself. Mm-hmm. And then from that sense of love, the kind of the natural response is to extend it outwards.
Okay. I was just saying when I was telling people that you're coming on, because you're from Kildare as well, you're from Salins. And when I was growing up, I'm a bit older than you, but the worst thing you could be called was a big-headed sure case who loved themselves. we sort of frown upon it.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, well, I think we're also kind of, most of us are raised within a kind of a system that teaches us to sort of play ourselves down, to kind of act small, to people please. And so I think so many of us go around with a deep sense of inadequacy and imposter syndrome. Do you know what I mean? Even here, like sitting in front of you, I kind of want to jump under the table. I'm like, I can't believe I wrote a book about love, you know what I mean? And I can hear that big head, you know, comments from the schoolyard coming back to me. But learning, I think, that this sort of, that these voices and these kind of commentaries that go on in our head are just a part of our conditioning.
Mm.
And when you go beneath the conditioning, when you really kind of connect with yourself, you see that all there is just this beautiful reservoir of love for yourself.
Okay, we're going to be jumping here, there and everywhere. And yeah, some of it will be your life and some of it will be Buddhism and other things. But just to your life, because you had a fractious relationship with your father and you've managed to sort that out. And there's love there now.
Yeah, totally. I mean, my father had a fractious relationship with himself.
Okay.
As well. Do you know what I mean? As did I. And our relationship was always quite messy. As I grew up and as he grew up, we definitely came to, I mean, it's the nicest bond I have now.
And would you say at a certain point in your life you hated your dad, or would you ever use that word?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, what it was, and it's very interesting, you know what I mean? It's sort of, I mean, hate is a word that comes from like extensive internal pain. And I felt a huge amount of pain that I felt that I was rejected by my father, you know?
So he left the family when you were three, was it?
No, my father was there. He
absent.
he drank a lot, you know what I mean? And he was battling his own demons, you know what I mean? My father also kind of was the product of his father and his mother, and they were the product of their family.
Yes,
and
so yes, all of this, as we all are. Yes.
All of this is sort of coming down in a mudslide,
yeah,
and landed with me. And I felt a huge amount of pain of just sort of, I never recognized the love that my father had for me. And it's in later years that I've begun to see that sort of he was and still is doing his best. And it's also recognizing like how difficult it was for my father to love himself too. My father grew up in Belfast, kind of didn't receive an awful lot of his needs in his home. And so with that kind of limited capacity, he still was loving me.
Right.
And I think like one of the jobs that we have to do is sort of this generation is begin to just decipher where is the actual love and kind of recognize that people are generally doing their best under a kind of a huge load of trauma and pain.
Okay, so it's sort of the thing that came up, and you don't say it in the book, is break the cycle. So, you know, if your dad had dysfunctional childhood, he became sort of a, you know, not functioning fully adult, passed it on to you, and you now are going to stop that. You're breaking the cycle.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you would hope that we'd all attempt to do that.
Yes.
And you think that the next generation are an interesting generation, because the future looks bright in certain respects. Because
yeah, completely. And just that sort of like, I guess, Ray, like, look, we're having this conversation. Do you know what I mean? Like, I can't imagine these conversations. Like, I wrote a book about love and somehow it gets on the radio and it gets in newspapers. Like, who am I? Do you know, I'm not an expert on any of this. Mm-hmm. I'm some guy who's had a particularly messy life and many messy relationships and had the idea to write a book about it. And now it becomes a conversation, which sort of proves to me in many ways that we are at a stage when people are very, very intent on healing and breaking those cycles.
So we're open to the conversation. You mentioned their messy relationships. So you were engaged 3 times in 6 years. Is that the statistic?
Yeah. This is my favorite part of the interview.
But you do say...
Yeah.
No, but adversity improves our learning. So that means you must be pretty
true,
good
and,
at it.
And you know something, like yeah, thank you. Thanks, getting engaged. No, but I think like, so when I came to meditation and spirituality and in quotation marks there.
Why quotation marks?
Because it's quite a general field, you know what I mean? And it I know that it can, it's something that maybe can kind of scare people off. But I know when I first started coming to these things, my sense was that I can't identify with any of these teachers because they're all so perfect. And then slowly but surely, I began to discover teachers who were former drug addicts, who had been divorced, who'd had these messy lives. And that enabled me to kind of picture that I could also have a place there too. So I kind of, the reason I write about this in my book is really just to sort of create kind of opportunities for other people who might think their lives are too messy to sort of picture a kind of a rosier future.
So The One, there's actually a chapter called The One. And we all, at some stage in our lives, buy into this romantic notion, probably, you know, sold to us through books and Hollywood, etc., that there is somebody out there who will complete us, the one, our soulmate. But you sort of rubbish that in a way, that you are the one. As in you yourself are the one who will do all that.
Yeah. I mean, it's like that expression, you know, you are the one you've been waiting for.
Right.
And so if you imagine we grow up with a certain split inside of us, we grow up with a little disconnection. And that's the whole reason we're so drawn to love. Like I out myself as a love addict, but I think we all are to a certain extent. Like we all go around with a bit of longing. And that longing, I believe, is to heal this split inside ourselves, to come back to a place of fully accepting ourselves. And we might try and find that in other people, but it's not sustainable. I feel the more sustainable way to be in relationship is to concentrate on yourself, to heal the rift within yourself, to learn how to fully accept and allow yourself. And then to meet somebody else. And then in that situation, when you do meet that other person, you're not trying to kind of consume them. You know, they're not providing a function for you. It's just a mutual celebration. Two people coming together and celebrating how much they love each other and how much self-love they have.
See, it all sounds lovely. There should be a nice smell of burning incense or something in the studio.
I can arrange that.
But say if you just go back to being human, right? And why we hook up.
Yeah.
And at a very basic level, it's procreation.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it? To perpetuate the species.
Yeah. Yeah, but as you and I both know, and anyone listening knows, like sex forms just a tiny part of a relationship, right? And the so often, and this is something that's particularly true of men. Like I do an awful lot of work with men and kind of run men's groups and things like this. And quite often the reason men, I guess, have this reputation for hooking up quite a lot or even more is often just a deeper kind of need for connection. To be seen by somebody else. Yes, there's this sexual component, but it's often just like an emotional release of somebody really kind of paying attention to them and listening to them. And that's also kind of this is this deep longing within ourselves to be listened to and to be heard by ourselves.
Right. But you see, the initial attraction is sexual.
Yes.
Is it not?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, what, a couple of months down the road, as you found yourself.
Or maybe even that very night, Rage.
Sorry. But you know, and the person that, you know, your partner as well, they say, well, this isn't really, this is just a sexual thing. It's, we've nothing in common. It's not a meeting of minds.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose it is the perfect thing where, you know, the sex is great and the meeting of minds happens and it's all happy. You're ticking all the boxes, so to speak. You know, what, like, I suppose what people want to know, you know, from your, because you've thought about it a lot, obviously, because you've written a book, is what are we doing wrong, Lee?
Yeah, I think what we're doing wrong is that we are placing unrealistic expectations on our relationships. And I think what we're doing is we're using our relationships, and this is something that I documented quite colourfully, I think, in the book, is that we use the relationships as escapes from actually getting like real with ourselves.
Mm.
Like so many of us have dreams. So many of us have beautiful dreams. And then we become ashamed of those dreams and we don't follow them and we put them aside. And so often we're betraying our needs in life. You know, we're doing things because the conditioning around us, we're doing things because of the things that we've heard when we were younger. And this is kind of like an anti-love attitude towards ourselves. The more you can kind of begin to listen to your needs, listen to your wants, come back to your dreams, then I feel the more you will, or the less you will seek out these relationship escape routes.
Is it not basically being selfish, being very selfish?
I guess it depends on, yeah, and yes, totally. And I think like it's high time that we maybe reevaluated that word.
Right.
You know, and reinterpreted it, you know, this idea of kind of approaching selfishness as just like self-respect.
Right.
You know, how often do we kind of say things to play ourselves down? How often do we kind of deny ourselves the things that we would give for others? I mean, what's a really good example, I think, often is how easy it is for us to express love for others, but then we find it a bit uncomfortable to express that same love for ourselves.
Well, that's the crux of it, Connor. That's the crux of it. Because you in your book want us to go around saying, I love you to yourself. You know, look in the mirror and say, I love you. Like, I've never done that. I don't think I ever will.
Yeah.
I'll never get to a stage in my life.
Why not?
Probably because I don't, is the answer.
But does it come from a place of like awkwardness or fear, or is there even like a little element of shame there in this whole idea of like, oof, loving yourself, that's icky?
Well, there's a bit of that. Yes, there's a bit of that. I'm an Irish male after all of a certain age.
Exactly. And you and me, we grew up in kind of similar waters.
Yeah.
But you know that, say, like we talk about shame, for example. Shame is something that disconnects us from ourselves. And it's useless.
Yeah.
It's entirely useless. And the way to kind of penetrate through shame is to do these uncomfortable things, such as like say to yourself, I love you. You know, I love you, Ray. You're doing a great job. You're a great dad. You have a great radio show. You know what I mean? Like little things like that.
I'm focusing in on that word shame before you got to that other embarrassing stuff. I'm blushing now. But the shame thing, I suppose, is it in any way associated with, you know, the way we were taught about, say, sex in school and the way the Catholic Church treated sex as sort of a dirty thing that wasn't to be spoken about.
Perhaps, but you know what I mean? I think shame goes far beyond sex. It simply is related to our appreciation of ourselves, our connection to ourselves. Like one of the kind, we talked about this idea, you know, like to say, oh, someone loves themselves is kind of like, in our culture, is the worst thing you can ever say about someone. But someone who loves themselves is someone who, you know, eats good food, takes rest when they're tired, would go to the doctor for a checkup, wouldn't find themselves in a toxic relationship. You know, would yes. kind of, would generally be like a great friend. Like, wouldn't you love to have a friend who loved themselves? They'd be so much fun to hang out with.
And I suppose back to where you started, you can't give from an empty pocket. So if you are that person who is completely comfortable in their own skin and loves themselves, well, then you're in a position to be the perfect friend, supportive friend. You're a good partner, dad, all those things.
And these people are kind of like unicorns. You know, it's very rare that you meet someone and they're just like, this person's so comfortable.
And the reason for that is, Conor Creighton, is because being human is being imperfect, is it not?
Yeah, but do you know something, Ray? And I think this is the... Being human is being imperfect, but we go around and our conditioning tells us that we have to be perfect.
Right.
So this is the great kind of like, this is the great conflict at the heart of us. We grow up in a society that teaches us that perfect is the standard. Yet at a deep intrinsic level, we know that like we are imperfect. And so self-love is all about accepting that.
Acceptance, right. Yeah, the book draws an awful lot on Buddhism.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the four, what are the four things you mentioned there that I haven't, the four, there's sort of the basics of Buddhism. It's life is unsatisfactory. That's the beginning, is it?
Yeah. The Four Noble Truths.
The Four Noble Truths.
Noble Truths. Well, it's this basic idea that life is unsatisfactory. In general, it's unsatisfactory. The reason it's unsatisfactory is that everything changes. So, you know, we have a beautiful sunny day today. It won't be sunny tomorrow.
Might be.
It might be.
No, but it will be different than today.
It will be different. Yeah. And so this attachment to things that are constantly changing is what causes this dissatisfaction. So it's the greater recognition that, say, if all things are changing, you know what I mean? And this is something that happens. You hear it in relationships all the time. People will sort of say, they just changed. They changed. But of course they're going to change. We're all changing all the time. And that's another reason to learn to selfishly love yourself. If you're constantly changing, like, I mean, we're in these bodies that are dying, you know, that are slowly getting weaker. Not to be too morbid again. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so the only kind of response when faced with that sort of existence is to accept yourself, to let yourself off the hook, to introduce more love into your life and to do that uncomfortable thing, which is just say, hey, you're doing a great job. I love you.
Right. Becoming spiritual is simply about listening to what's going on the inside. And that's what you say in the book. Mm. See, the spiritual thing, I've never got my head around. You know, I'd say to people, are you religious? They go, no, I'm spiritual.
Mm.
And I go, what does that mean? And I never got a satisfactory, but you've written it down there. That's your definition. Being spiritual is simply about listening to what's going on the inside.
Yeah. So I think it's like, it's being open. I think like, if you look at it, it's just, it's this idea that you're being open to mysterious things that maybe you don't understand.
Right.
And it's about being open to deeper connections. It's this idea of trusting things that you don't really know.
Okay. That doesn't suit me, Connor. Sorry
which you might experience when you're in your garden.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like gardening is a deeply spiritual thing.
So it's on Buddhism still, do you believe in reincarnation?
Yeah.
I got that from the book, yes.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So that you will come back as are they all human beings, or could it be an animal or an insect? Or
I'm not sure.
A sloth?
I don't know.
Right.
But as a kind of a, I don't think it's really that important that I know either, you know. But all I can say is that as a sort of a technique for making this life a little bit more manageable and a little bit nicer, having a kind of a slight belief in reincarnation is great. Because it just means that you kind of, maybe you can say, well, it's not so important that I do it.
You're telling yourself a little lie, in other words, just to console yourself. Is that it?
Well, no. it's a kind of a humility in that I don't need to know everything.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. Of course, you can never know everything, can you?
You can never know anything. But again, with this sort of the conditioning that we have, where we have to be perfect and we have to know everything, places an extreme amount of pressure upon us. So I like to think that this sort of being open to greater mysteries around us just enables your life to be a lot less pressurized.
Are you in love at the moment? With yourself, obviously. We've established that.
No, I'm not, apart from, yeah.
Right. Let's see what they're saying there before we let you go. Love is like a butterfly. Pursued, it's always just out of reach. But sometimes if you sit quietly, it may come and alight on you, says Tom Carew, Dundrum in Tip. Thank you, someone who talks total sense. I spent 8 years in and out of a meditation centre in India. It gave me everything I am now. How can you love anyone if you don't love yourself first? It's the only way to get out of the power games that have brought the world to its knees. It's so obvious, says Nutan. And is loving yourself more rare than common in people? This idea seems totally unreachable or even improbable to me. It's a nice idea, but very unrealistic. Is it? That person says, well, yeah, I think the reason you've written the book is to try, because it's not the norm. It's rare. Like if we did, you know, Joe Duffy does these polls. Like if we did a poll right now and asked our listeners how many people love themselves, yeah. I'd say that you're probably, you know, 95% would say they don't love themselves. Or maybe I'm wrong.
And I think they would say that because it feels uncomfortable to say it. But I think if you begin to look at your life, this loving yourself functions in a sort of sense of degrees. Like I'm sure there's moments, right, in the day when you do beautiful things for yourself. Right?
I really love my breakfast.
and that's an act of love for yourself, right? Or I'm sure there's every so often where like you get asked to do things and you're like, I'm exhausted, and you say no, right? That's, again, like an act of love for yourself. Okay. So I think the idea of kind of, we do love ourselves, but the language behind it feels a little strange.
Okay. It's all psychobabble. Love is a hormone called oxytocin. To that person. They're you're not going to shift them, Connor, I think.
Yeah, they're from Salins.
The Truth About Love, a Modern Manifesto and Spiritual Guide to Relationships, is in bookshops as and from tomorrow. And Connor Creighton is the author. Connor, thanks so much. Thanks for coming in. Mind yourself.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.